Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 230 of Yes But Why podcast, my interview with Lakshmi Priya, a performer in the Bangalore improv comedy community. But first, let's check out our sponsors. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You know, I've been digging in lately to listening to the books on Audible, and it really has been the escape I've been looking for. Check it out. Really good novels and some amazing original content. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. This episode of Yes But Why is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. Podcast Cadet is dedicated to helping you build your podcast. We will connect you to the resources you'll need to get better and better with each and every episode. Swing on by PodcastCadet.com to get help for all your podcasting needs. Let us know you heard about us from Yes But Why, and you'll get 20% off the workshop or service you buy. This week on Yes But Why, I have the honor of talking to Lakshmi Priya, an Indian theatrical performer who participates in City Lamps Playback Theater and Improv Comedy Bangalore. In our chat, we talk about dance, satire, and the therapeutic effects of storytelling. Lakshmi and I really enjoyed our chat, and we dug deep into the subjects of culture and empathy. You'll love it. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 230, Playing Games and Telling Stories with Lakshmi Priya. Enjoy! Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
So it's interesting because my father was in defense, which means Air Force, which means we roamed around a lot through the country as I was growing up. And the only connection to cultural things that I had were these annual dances that the defense colony that I was part of would organize. So every, I think around October, November, which is also the puja season, we would have dance competitions. And I and my sister would take part in a couple of dance competitions. And that, but the thing is, in my upbringing, we never thought of it as a serious engagement, serious in the sense of something that requires committed learning. It's just something you did for leisure and you left it behind. And then I did, I studied science during my school, high school, and I ended up in my 12th grade also finishing science. And I did this really ridiculous thing of joining a dance crew, which was really ridiculous because, one, I didn't have training in dancing, but I knew I had a lot of fun while doing that. And second, because it didn't pay me nothing. And that was the time I was supposed to be studying for the competitive exams, because literally my whole batch went into doing engineering, whereas I bunked the physics exam, which is really important to get a scoring for getting an engineering seat, and went for a dance competition instead with my crew. And when the results came, my mother was like, so your name is not there, what happened? And I'm like, no, it should be there. I guess I did really poorly. She's like, no, even if you did poorly, you would get a poor rank, but your name is not there at all. And that's when I had to tell her that I had bunked a class. And then by then I was really into exploring what it would mean to do a humanities undergrad and not engineering like all my batchmates were doing. And that's when I joined this triple major, which was performing arts, English, and psychology. And I had never done theater before. I had never even watched a play. In fact, my worldview was very narrow, not in the sense that I was ignorant of other, I was ignorant, not I did not not like them, but I just did not know they existed. And then as I had joined for dance, but the dance teacher was an absolute tyrant. And I started finding this freedom in theater, the lack of rigidity, the presence of experimentation, which I really enjoyed doing. And it sort of started with playback theater. That's when I really realized I really enjoy stories and story making and performing it back. It was joyful.
Tell me about playback theater. I've heard the phrase before, but I don't know if I totally understand the form.
So from a reference point of improv, playback theater is one where the narrative is given by the teller, in that it's always the playing back or improvising on the real life story that the teller shares. It's a community form which was founded by Jonathan Fox and Joe Salas in New York in 1970s. And it has now traveled everywhere. And it was part of my education when I was learning theater, like I was saying. And the form is really interesting because it has this whole, it is constantly evolving, and it works on the fact that all stories are sort of connected. And one story is, while being deeply personal, is also resonant with others in the room at the level of the themes, at the level of the emotions, at the level of some of the concepts like belongingness or not belongingness, making connections through stories. So playback theater is often just playing back of stories that are shared by the audience member at the moment through movement, music, physicality, metaphors, and sometimes literal presentations of their story. And it's often shared that sharing your story at an event itself can be quite cathartic, or it's interesting to hear you say that story. And the second, seeing it played back can be often therapeutic in nature, because somebody else is assuming your role and they're playing it back. While playback is not therapy, it can have therapeutic effect when done really well. And there's a lot of literature and theory always being created, and everybody's really studying the form all the time and challenging the basics and foundations of it, which I really enjoy in the process of community making. So that's playback in a nutshell.
That's an excellent nutshell. Thank you for that. Now, it sounds like these are playback theater really combines the things that you ended up triple majoring in, right? Performing,
yeah.
Arts, psychology, and English. What does English mean to you? I know what English means in my college, but what does English mean in your college? Are you also just reading English, like British literature?
Yeah, that's a good question, especially coming from a country which was colonized. Studying of, you know, the arts would have some reflection. However, having said that, I was very privileged to go to two of the colleges for my master's. So I did master's in English studies too, which both were very concerned with looking at the course structure and the syllabus quite critically, and bringing in conversations from vernacular literature, from critical lens of, say, feminism or ableism or diasporic studies. To me now, what English studies means is definitely being able to think in manners that can challenge status quo or challenge even the process of history making. Because I think it was the first time, even before I really got into performing arts, it was one of the first few classes in English studies during my undergrad when I was like, one of those glass shattering moments. We were talking about the Second Coming, the poem. And there's this whole image of a gyre spinning, and the imagery is so beautiful. And suddenly I realized, oh, I have imagined this in my head about being stuck in a thought loop even though the poem is not necessarily about that. But I was like, oh my God, somebody wrote this some in another century, in another era. I'm sitting here in 2011 in Bangalore, and I can connect to these words through their imagination. That was quite, I still find it very trippy, actually. I find reading very, very rewarding as a process.
Interesting. I love that it is so much about critical thinking and, you know, taking apart literature. I also went to a college that was, you know, super into that. There were a lot of philosophy classes and a lot of all of the, they called it lit trad, literature traditions, and we had one through four. And so, like, every year you took one, they taught you a few things, but there was a lot about, like, literary criticism. And I find in my theater life that literary criticism is very helpful because, like, I think of improv, like I think of literary criticism, in that
I really resonate with
the same scene or the same thing that's going on and get two different vibes from it, you know? So so like you have two people, they do a scene, and then at the end of the scene, you're like, hey, when she said this, why did you do that? And that person says, oh, well, I thought this was going on. And they're like, what? I thought this was going on. And it's literally, and as opposed to them being like, oh, I misunderstood, I'm bad. I'm like, no, guys, this is a poem, and we're all trying to figure out what it means. And we all come at it with different things. Yeah.
Absolutely. I find that so, thank you for saying that, because I have been, something that I've been really confronted with and been thinking about is holding complexities, which can often also have contradictions, gently, you know, like you're reading a scene, like you said, like a text almost, and you're thinking about, oh, okay, so contradictory thoughts can exist without each having to sort of cancel each other out. Like one person could be thinking X, another person could be thinking Y. And as an observer, it's also beautiful to watch how those two journeys unravel to make a scene.
Plus, it's also so interesting, like when you start thinking about performance from the point of view of the audience, and you're like, there's 50 people in that room. That's 50 different perspectives. They all came from different things today. They came and sat down. They have different worldviews, and they are going to receive what you gave them differently. And so like, when people try to like lump everyone in, I'm like, no, I want to talk to everyone. I wish we could do an outro of every show and be like, tell me what you thought. What was your favorite? What did you hate? Just give me your vibes. Like when you came in, were you having a good day or a bad day? Like just the idea of that is so like fascinating to think how all those things come together. And of course, you're talking about two contradictory ideas happening at once. I feel like that's the world, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Not only the idea of cognitive dissonance, which I feel like is like the buzzword or buzz phrase of 2020 for sure, but like even just regular, not even like you're telling me A and I don't believe you because that hurts my feelings. It's like you just, well, my life experience is this. So when you give me this situation, I react to it this way, but your life is different. You know, it's like, oh my goodness. So, so fascinating. Right. And then also, just to bring it back to like right now, as far as like looking at the world, like it's all something to be literarily criticized. Yeah, I made it. The, I try to look at like the larger sense, like, hey, why are we all baking? Like, what is it about that that made us feel better? Like different things, like different. I always try to follow cultural trends, like when a bunch of movies come out that are similarly themed, I go, what about that theme was inspired by a year ago? right? Like, yeah, what happened in our cultural consciousness that made us all, you know, like the big boom of superhero movies was right after we had 9/11. People were like, we need a hero. Let's get those heroes up. Hey, guys who've been writing heroes since the 40s, could we grab your characters and put them on stage with some hot guys? Got it. Yep. And then we did it, and everyone was happy, right? It's like trying to figure out how those things work and how things connect to bring it back down to, like, improv scenes, like, to see the way a whole group of people reacts to an idea. Like you were talking about tough subjects. I'm sorry, I'm talking so much, and it's your interview.
No. I'm really glad. I think that means we are both very extremely engaged in the conversation.
So when I am teaching sketch writing, I will talk about satire, because satire is a tough thing, but I think that it's very necessary. And I think that it's important for creative people to use their talents to communicate this kind of stuff, because I think creative people have a wider breadth of empathy available to them purely out of the fact that they are interested in a wide view of stories and points of view. And so they're going to be more open to exploring topics than people who are not creative. We're not mainly creative anyway. I think every human is creative. But anyway, there are some people that, like, reject it and don't want to critically think, and some people who are open to every possible point of view and say, like, explain it to me. I just want to know why you think that. So satire for me is like taking tough subjects and then softball pitching them in. So that they can watch this story and go, I don't know why this woman won't give these two guys ice cream. She's so silly. And then by the end of the scene, realizing the scene's about gay marriage. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you watch the whole scene and you never know what it's about. But you still are like, hey, what do you think? Do you think that lady should have given those two men the ice cream they were asking for? I mean, it was the law that they could have ice cream. But she was like, you guys are an abomination. You can't have ice cream. And they're like, no, I mean, it's just ice cream. Give it to them, right? It's for everybody.
Yeah. Usually satire is done so sensitively and intelligently. Is also such a pure thing of joy in that I was just thinking about what we were talking about improv being also being a text for us to read and seeing what patterns repeat themselves and who are the people who get to talk the most about improv, who get most represented during scenes or who are off stage, who gets to make the calls, etc. That is as much a reality as also talking about the joy that is playing together as people who like each other on stage. Satire is also, I think, about bringing together that sort of intelligent, I guess, subverting of the harmful and problematic stuff outside. Also, while giving absolute joy of watching something intelligent and someone speak from a space of empathy. Because otherwise, sometimes talking about difficult topics or topics that are, I guess, loaded and rightfully so, becomes often preachy. And I will speak for myself. Sometimes when I launch into these conversations, a lot of my friends, especially not from theater background, stop me or second being like, oh, you take life too seriously. Why must we always talk about this heavy stuff? Can we talk about our childhood nostalgia or whatever, you know? But this is like you said, consuming or being exposed to conversations that are important without making it seem like a taxing thing, you know? Yeah. So I really agree.
Yeah, that makes me think, to bring it back to the poetry that we were talking about, that a lot of people, you know, were doing that with their poems. You know, they're talking about some very serious topics, but if it's about a flower, then it's like, oh yeah, that's fine. This is a nice little thing about flower. And you're like, this is a story about a man beating his wife. Are you not reading this? Like, but it's not, but it's like a different You know what I mean? Like, you can, essentially, you can choose to ignore it if you'd like. You can choose to look at the artwork as artwork, or you can look in and see what the deeper story is, or third option, you can see what reflects back to you of yourself and have that as well. Because, like, you think about songs, for instance, you listen to music, you usually take a song and you turn it into something that has to do with you. Right? We take that music and all of a sudden it's like, this is about me. This is about my life. This understands me. It's like, this man who lives in Los Angeles and wrote this pop song has never met you. He doesn't know that. This is about his girlfriend. It is not a thing. You know, it's like, it's so funny, but it connects because it has that, because it is art and it has the ability to be seen for itself, for its message, or for its reflection of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you're in school, you're learning all about playback theater, which also I think reflects a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, the criticism, the tough topics, the stuff like that. Oh, one question I had about playback theater, you mentioned a lot of sort of, you said metaphorical things. Are there a lot of, I don't want to use the word absurd, but like, you know,
abstract?
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. are there a lot of abstract pieces in the playback of the story? Meaning like it's dance without words and it's like moving of physical objects without it having directly to do with the theater. I mean, the story itself. How does the scenes work?
So as with improv, even playback, the amount that I have seen, also a big shout out to IPTN, which is International Playback Theatre Network, which had a a conference. It has a conference every 4 years. The last one was in Bangalore, and it was hosted by the Actors Collective. So that was in Bangalore. So we got to experience a lot of playback from across the world. So the spectrum of playing back is often anywhere between literal playing back to absolutely abstract, the way you expressed it. And then there are all teams which sort of mix and match these elements of, say, even magical realism or very naturalistic playing back to very abstract playing back. The one thing that holds everything together is the question, is this in service of the teller's story? So you can go deep into a story, but the question is, even if you are completely abstract in your playing back, are you still rooted in the story which was shared? Because at the end of the day, I think, for me, at least, the idea of playback is not being entitled to anybody's story. Because, you know, like you're saying, there are 30 people who have come into a Zoom room. They are thinking it's going to be theater if they don't know about playback. And suddenly you're like, so we don't have a script. Whatever you share with us is going to be what we reflect back to you. There is no reason for us to assume that they want to share or we are entitled to their stories. So we create a space where they feel like they want to share, and we take it with that sort of respect to for that gift of the real life story that they have shared. For example, even if the story is something like, you know, I went out and I bought an apple, I came back and I loved that apple, it's still a story which is worth playing back with as much respect as other stories that we've had across time that we have been doing. Like, there have been many coming out stories. There have been stories about sexism or sexual assault, domestic abuse. So while each story is unique and has its own gravity, all stories also deserve respect. So I guess as long as an interplay of these abstract and literal elements can serve the purpose of playing back the story, I think it can be used. All of those are modes to sort of reach the what is called the heart of the story. And there are always multiple hearts of a story, but these are the modes to reach them while playing back.
Hmm. Do you rehearse with your playback theater troupe and do games and practice scenes? Or are you, you know, doing various scene work exercises or both?
The short answer is both. The troupe that I co-founded and I'm part of is called City Lamps. Our practice session sort of looks different for different folks with different experience of number of years, for example. We have some of my improviser friends who have just joined City Lamps, who have been doing playback only for as long as the lockdown. So they have never necessarily done physical playing back. They have mostly done only Zoom playing back, which I find so interesting. The rehearsals often are based on the skills that we need for good playing back. For example, deep listening, how to listen to a story without hearing your own bias of the story. Because if we play back our biases about that story, then the teller is going to, not only is it going to be disrespectful, the teller is going to disconnect from it immediately. For example, it can be a very small bias also and seemingly a harmless bias. For example, if somebody said, you know, my partner, and they probably said their partner because they don't want to tell us their gender, and we might not realize it, but we might give a pronoun to it while playing back. And those can be small spaces where the audience disconnects because they made a very conscious choice to say partner, and I might have not deeply listened to that choice and might have done a great playing back, but might have said he or she while they did not give a pronoun to their partner at all. So that's one of the modes we work with, deep listening. Then we work with just tools like how to use body to maximum output of meaning. How can we play back using our body? Then there are different formats in playback, which we rehearse a lot. Then there is music, how to work together with music as a playbacker. Musicians are also playbackers, but they're of course giving a lot more of their skill as much as the actors. But we need to start listening to the musicians too, because the atmosphere in a playback show is often created by the musician. At least at City Lamps, we rely heavily on the musician for atmosphere creation. With the folks who have usually just began playing back right now, we work a lot with the foundations, like how to play a story back, how to play it back empathetically, mostly how to play it back without our own, as much as possible, our biases not dictating the choices we make. Then, of course, having fun with the playing back, which is just connecting together, playing some games, sharing stories. That's usually how the rehearsals go.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I love the deep listening. I think that's such an important part about improv. And, you know, when I'm teaching my level one classes, that's my number one thing. I'm like, you guys can secretly tell each other 1,000 things without the audience knowing. I was like, if you say this phrase this way, you're telling him X, Y, Z. But if you say it this way, there's no extra information in it. Like, try your best to use your words as well as you can, and also to listen to the tiny clues each one of you are giving one another. I always feel about physicality that it is really great to use as a setting tool. Like, it creates a space, it creates a vibe of the space. Like, you're like, is this person happy or sad? Are they having a good day or not? Is this room clean or messy? Like, different details that like help explain stuff, you know? Like just the other day, I was watching, I'm making a weird Avengers reference, strap in. Endgame, Thor is fat. and slothful.
Right.
And now usually, because I am also fat, I get mad at things in movies and television that are using fatness to indicate a specific emotional state, because I don't think it actually indicates that emotional state. However, I will accept this because the scenario is such that Thor is not taking care of himself because he's suffering about something that he did that he feels weird about and conflicted. And so the idea of that physicality, it explains and says so much to the audience that they don't have to say, to bring back the idea of tough conversations. They don't have to be like, Thor is having a hard time because he murdered a guy and he feels conflicted because he doesn't know if murder was really the right plan for a person who considers himself a hero. And now he can't go back to just being the king of this area with no repercussions and half his friends are dead. So that's what we're talking about. But they don't say that, right? They just look at him. He's got a beer belly. And he stares off and they're like, is he okay? No. And that's it, right? It explains everything, the physicality of that. And, you know, like, you can do that on stage. You can show your shoulders slunked and you know, you're not paying attention. It's like, what's that, man? I don't know. I'm not paying attention. And that character is like, oh, man, Thor's having a tough time, right? And you just those tiny moves can communicate to everybody else in the scene that vibe. So I don't know. I love those tiny detail things that are.
I think it adds so much texture to a scene. It adds those lovely gifts that we can give each other, be it character traits or stuff that we find together in a scene. It's almost like playing hide and seek together, playing like a nice game.
So I wanted to ask you further about, so after you went to college and you start performing, how do you get involved in, and you've like gone to school for a while. You were in regular university, then you got a master's. That's a lot. I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming you're still quite young. So that was recently. How did you get yourself into the community, like with Improv Comedy Bangalore and the Adam and Deves? How do you get connected to the communities after college?
I graduated from my postgraduate degree in 2016. I was doing playback all along. So I'd learned it in undergrad, and my master's degree was like 8 hours from Bangalore, the city where I had studied undergrad. And I would keep coming back to do different workshops and just to keep playing back with my team. So once I came back after my graduation, I was still performing playback theater with them, and it had already been around, say, 8 years or 7-8 years since I started performing with a lot of them. I mean, the team's composition had, of course, changed in all those years, but I had a long history with that team. And as I was performing with them, Abhishek Desai, who is one of the co-founders of Improv Comedy Bangalore, was also in that team with me, in that playback team. And he told one of my other friends, whom I was really close to in the playback team, that she should audition for this all-women's improv team. And she asked me if I would go along with her for moral support. I was like, sure, why not? Sounds like a good plan. We just hang out. We'll get some food after that. So it can be a dinner thing. I will come along. And when I got there, I had not known improv at all in any form. I did not grow up watching, you know, Whose Line Is It Anyway or Saturday Night Live, because my pop culture consumption was very Tamil, very Malayalam, very Indian vernacular. I started watching English movies only in my 11th grade. In fact, I didn't speak English very well till my 6th grade, because I did not have anybody to speak English with. But anyway, and then I see these games that are being played, and Abhishek asked if I'd like to just get in and audition too. And when I was like, okay, if auditioning is just playing these seemingly wonderful games, and I remember we played Three Pillars, where you know you say one line, your partner says another, you say one more, and the scene is over. We played that. Then we played a chair game, I remember. Then we played a space object creation game. And it was just so much fun that I was like, okay, I really want to do this. And then I got through the audition along with Kavya and Shweta, who were also auditioning with me, that particular audition. And it was just wonderful. Also, my friend didn't stick though. She also had gotten selected in the audition, but she after a while chose not to continue with the Adam and Eve's. But I sort of really enjoyed the all-women space that it provided. Also, I had grown up with mostly female friends, and I really mostly get along with women a lot. And I didn't have many male friends, at least until that point. Now I do have a little more number of friends who identify as male. But yeah, the idea of this all-women space and just having so much fun together while playing games really appealed to me. And that's why I stayed. Having said that, it's only been 2.5 years, so I'm still figuring out the ropes of the form. I still don't find myself too confident to say, hey, I understand improv completely, which is why when you're saying about, you know, you need to be a certain level of experienced to be okay with deep listening during improv scenes, I feel like I'm still grappling with that. I'm able to do it quite well in playback theater, but with improv, I'm still learning to not panic at the idea of having to have a good scene or a funny scene. So, yeah.
Now, are you guys in the Adam and Eve's working towards comedy, or are your scenes also dramatic?
I think we are definitely working towards improv of listening. So some of our scenes end up being hilarious just because we are having fun. But we definitely don't try to make only comic scenes. We have a mix usually. And also the forms that we often choose are montages and Armando. We had a crossword format for a while. All of these are formats which allow for a variety of scenes to emerge. So often it's grounded in just having played together a lot because we really have fun playing together and finding the humor in it and the drama in it. We often have very moving real life stories that are shared. We have a lot of silence in a lot of our scenes. So yeah, it's a mix of both, I would say. Because one of the first few things that we learned from Bala and Madhu, especially because they had been in the team for long, Aarti too, was that you don't have to be funny. And there was a collective relaxation of shoulders as soon as they said that, because that was everybody's fear. Everybody knew who had joined during that time. Oh my God, how to be funny? I'm not funny, you know? And there's such a gendered thing also there, because women are not funny, apparently. That's like a baggage you get into an improv room with. So to hear that anything that comes out of authentic connection and listening here is great was a big permitting moment for a lot of us in Adam and Eve's.
The reason why I asked about the comedy aspect is just, you know, I personally think there's like different ways to prepare for that, as far mm-hmm. as like, for me, I'm a big structure person. So like,
right.
I try to explain to my like beginner students just the basic structure of comedy. I'm like, comedy is not like you're funny or you're not. Everyone can do comedy. Yeah. Comedy is Absolutely. A series of repetitions that the audience recognizes. Yeah. There's some people that can deliver it better than others, but comedy is like, it's like a formula. There's not, I've literally watched a pie in the face 3 times in a row in a show, make an audience cheer at the third one. Like, it's a pie in the face. It's the simplest, silliest, most unnecessary thing in the world. But the audience could not have been more excited when that third pie popped up. When they saw that pie again.
I love
like,
that.
Yeah. Like, the place lit up for life. All I know is that a guy is going to get it.
When audience is just so, I don't know, childlike guffawing and just losing it, basically.
Well, but that's the other thing that I'm like, I want to debunk for people, especially people who are being told that women can't be funny. Human animals, no matter what their gender, can say things out their face and people are going to laugh because it's not about I have a skill or a talent. It's about I presented information to you in a certain format, and that format is what made you laugh. Like, you can watch certain things. Like, for instance, the improv format of The Herald, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've... I'm going to hope that you've seen an episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, I know of Herald,
No, I know you know of Herald, but the show, the television show Seinfeld, if you watch the television show Seinfeld, it's a Herald. It is literally like, when you watch the format of the show, them connecting with each other versus going out on their own individual adventures is a Herald. The format makes sense. We return to them as they're all like, this crazy thing's going on in the world. And they're like, that's crazy. And then each one of them go out on an adventure. And we watch Jerry do something and George do something and Elaine do something. And then they come back and they reflect upon what just happened. Like, it's the setup of that. And that's why people are like, oh, it's so great. Yeah, it's great. It's great because it's a funny thing.
Set up
situations. But the format leads you in the path of the comedy, right? Like, so for me, I always try to debunk that idea of improv comedy being scary. I'm like, like, no. Also, improv, when I teach level one, I'm like, as long as you speak, I'm happy. That's it. That's all I got.
Right?
Like,
you
said words. Look at you. You did it. Like, that's it. That's all I need you to do for me to be so happy for you, you know?
Wow. I think that's such a great way of being a facilitator. Because it's not saying, oh, you do the bare minimum, I'm happy. It's saying, hey, I understand it's difficult to, you know, get into a class and, you know, make things up, especially when we don't necessarily live like that out there in the real world. So this becomes sort of a space where you're expected to let go of all the masks you wear to exist outside. So as a facilitator, when I'm imagining, as you're saying, me being in your class, when you say that, oh, you spoke, that's amazing. And you say that with absolute conviction, I feel victorious. And I feel like I want to learn more from you. And I feel open to try more things. So that's awesome.
Now for you guys, what is since you're joining Adam and Eve's without necessarily having that much of a background in improv, how much work are you guys doing on a regular basis to get together as a team before you start performing? Or do they just throw you in the fire right away?
The first time when we performed, we had, so there was a set pattern of at least 3 to 4 rehearsals before each show. So that was sort of understood that we had to do that. So we had a first show after a couple of rehearsals, but a lot of us were really still worried because we didn't feel ready to sort of perform. But since then, what has happened that we have moved into the space where we are also each other's very good friends and confidants. So we sort of know, and also we have been now, this team has been together for at least 2 years, the current Adam and Eve's team, which means we almost, you know, being able to read each other. So we are able to read each other. So the amount of rehearsals have gone down during the lockdown time. But what has happened is that the number of shows have gone up. So we are able to do shows and again, be with each other a lot more. One ritual that we always usually do is checking in before rehearsals, and sometimes somebody needs the half of the rehearsal to be a check-in because they are coming from a difficult place or they're coming from a place of a different kind of emotional peak. So we just, you know, pause our rehearsal and just listen to them, or they listen to me. And that sort of space of being together and connection really then ends up showing on stage. So sometimes it is rehearsal, like hardcore rehearsal. We go through the structure, we do it a couple of times. And a lot of times it's these axillary things like warming up together, telling each other what's going on in our lives, checking in. When we were physically also around, we would do visualizations before show. That's something I really swear by, which is just closing our eyes and imagining how that the show would be great, imagining the audience seated, imagining us walking onto the stage, and imagining us doing a wonderful show, and imagining us walking out. So all of these little parts together, I guess, is what makes Adamant Eves at this point in time. And last but most important thing is also there have been and there are always disagreements between members. But Bala as an artistic director and also us as people have created or strongly believe that we need to make space to have those conversations. And those are not waste of time, but those are almost as important, if not more important, than rehearsals themselves. When we disagree or we feel disrespected or undervalued, to speak up and say, hey, I think I need more validation, or hey, I think the way you shared that made me feel not included, or to say that, hey, we are moving too fast. I'm not able to keep up. Can we slow down as a team? We need to take a break for a while, et cetera. So having those quote unquote difficult conversations have also gone a long way in being friends.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about improv troupes, especially ones that stay together multiple years like you guys have, is the just basic human connection that you have between the people. I mean, when I'm teaching classes, I'm essentially trying to fast track that connection over the course of 8 classes. It's like, okay, I've got 16 hours to make these guys best friends. Like,
right?
That's legitimately my job. Because once they are open to one another, and once, because if your friend, if your best friend says something that is weird and potentially offensive, you're going to deal with them in a much different way than a person who is a stranger to you.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And so in the case of any improv scenario, you need to be able to trust the people around you so that as words just fall out of their mouths, if it turns out that something they say is like crazy and you need to like wrap it around something else to make it a little less crazy, then it would be easier and also understanding with your friends if you're like, well, this thing is not what we're going to talk about right now, and then they get it, and it's not like they're mad, like, how dare you take away my idea, but they're like, you're right, I shouldn't have brought that up, or whatever. Like I know I'm using like a vague thing, but you know, I love
it's definitely resonating. I absolutely agree.
I mean, I love the fact that you guys are connected as friends. Like, that is what you're looking to do. The check-in too is really great, because to feel the temperature of the room and to feel the temperature of each other and where you're at mentally can totally give you just the tools that you need to communicate in a way that, like, potentially, you know, you wouldn't have if you were unaware that, like, they just had a terrible day at the office and their boss yelled at them right before they left work and they're afraid they're going to get fired. And, like, potentially knowing that when you're doing a scene, maybe you can do something in that scene to make them feel better. Like, hey, man, it looks like you lost something, but you found this. Yeah. So, hey, bright side, right? And, like, find a way to, like, make that person feel better, you know, as a friend.
And there's something in being able to say, hey, lean on me on stage, while knowing that they can lean on you offstage and vice versa. There's something powerfully connecting about that.
Yeah, definitely. Like the trust that you can have between people is, you know, it's really important to put out there. It's really important for people to feel like, especially because improv is like performing without a net, and you need to be able to be the net for each other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not going to go up on the high wire and do some acrobats without somebody you totally trust to catch you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So for you, what is the, I know that you've been doing so many Zoom shows and you just finished your 24-hour improv marathon. What for you is the like exciting thing that's going on for you right now? What are you excited about creatively?
Ooh, that's such an exciting question. I was leaning on the wall till now. Now I just sat up straight because that's such a great question. Can I name two, three things?
Sure. Talk about whatever you like.
Yay. Okay. So first and foremost, it's my duo with Abhishek, the friend I was talking about who asked my other friend to audition. we both do a duo called Them, which is mostly organic improv. So we just see where suggestions take us and we get inspired by the scenes that we do. And then we just go ahead. And we have a particular show called Everybody Just Wants to Dance, which we are quite always excited about. But we have not done it in a while since the lockdown began. So we are excited about rebooting that. However, what we did was start a live talk show. We did three episodes of that. We spoke about, you know, audience and performance safety, performers safety. We spoke about being silly during how to bring the silliness into a performance. And then we spoke about the body in a performative space in three different episodes. So to go back and take stock of those shows and how we want to go forward is something I'm really excited about with Abhishek Desai. Then Bala, who also I know, Amy, she's wonderful, whom you have interviewed, is we also have a duo called Shadows, which is something we are really excited about. It's quite an interesting and earnest adventure into the dark spaces that folks go into. So we have an anonymous sharing sheet where people share about dark thoughts or thoughts they have had which have made them go, oh, I shouldn't be having this thought, which, you know, sometimes ranges from sort of like plans to murder to like just shoplifting ideas. So we then improvise with that. So that's something we have had one premiere show and one full length show. And we are quite proud of it. And we quite like playing with each other because it's quite easy to read each other for all the reasons that we spoke about earlier. I'm definitely excited about writing about improv and playback, which is something I've been trying to give more and more time to. And lastly, I think I'm really excited about community building because we had the 24-hour marathon, and of course, Bala and Arjun, who are the co-artistic directors of ICB, sort of held it so powerfully. And Faraz, who was on tech almost all of 24 hours, we wouldn't have been able to do it without him. But as importantly, we had a whole 20-odd number of people who were just there through 24 hours or big part chunks of those hours, just saying, hey, I'm here. What do you need? Hey, I'm here. Do you need for us to make a Zoom account? So what sort of facilitation of a community makes that possible for folks to feel valued, for folks to feel like, oh, they can challenge things about how things are going and they can feel like they can take ownership of a community. So that's something I'm very not just excited about, but very puzzled by. Which feeds into each other. When I'm really puzzled, I'm like, oh, this is exciting. Let's figure it out. And when I'm figuring it out, I'm excited about figuring it out. So that's something, but it can be quite a daunting task too, because time and logistics is real. And if I had all the time in the world, I'd like to like for everything to be as democratic as possible and, you know, untangle each thread of emotion or hurt or lack of validation that has been caused. But I guess running a community is also about logistics. So I'm very excited about how these two can meet and what the ideal balance is. So, yeah.
One thing I would say is that those two things that you're talking about are two separate jobs and should rarely be intertwined, right? Like, so there's a person or people, a committee perhaps, who like talks to people and helps them with their grievances and deals with the rougher parts. And then there's other people who are in charge of scheduling and wrangling and making people go there, because the vibes required in those human beings are going to be different, you know, like the committee to help people needs to be warmer and more motherly and kind of like, hey, I love you no matter what. But the boss who's getting you to schedule has to be like, Johnny, you going to show up on time? You have been late the last three times. We need you to get here. Are you going to do it? If not, you're out. Like, there needs to be sort of a, and I know that mothers also do that, but I mean, like, you know, one needs to be warmer and then one needs to be more like you said, logistical.
We it's need
like,
to
we gotta get this done, you know. So all I'm saying is I appreciate the idea that you are learning and trying to like figure it out. But I don't want you to put all of those things on a single person, i.e. you, with the idea that you would be required to do all of those jobs in like together all at once.
Yeah.
The beauty of a community is that you can share who does
Absolutely. Disseminating. And you know, Amy, what you said is so interesting, because I'm also thinking about if those two can sort of coexist. And I definitely think these are roles wise different roles. But something I've been thinking about is also giving the agency to the people. If it makes sense, you know, like, hey, see, this is our structure, and structures go a long way for that structure and transparency. For example, if you're transparent about the fact that, hey, you need to like the adamant Eves were with me when I auditioned. See, hey, dude, you need to come for three rehearsals. Anything less than that, we can't have you in the show, because you wouldn't feel ready to be on stage, you know, then as a person that I know that, okay, if I haven't, the onus is on me to show up for three rehearsals. So I guess the idea of whom the onus is placed on and how it is placed is also something that I'm interested in. But definitely, I agree about the warmer vibe and, you know, unconditional sort of support. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like too, like people, especially if they're not, if you're not as close to a person, like if they're not your best friend, but they're someone you know and someone who's a leader, you know, you consider them one thing. You look at them in a sort of two-dimensional scenario. You're like, that guy's the boss. He tells me where to go. Okay.
Yeah.
This person's in charge of schedule. When she says I get there, I got to get there. Right. If I don't, one of those two people or potentially a third are the person who's going to yell at me for not accomplishing the task, right? And the harder part is that, like, in the scenario of this thing, it can get very disheartening, because you're very excited and I'm very excited, and I've been in theaters, like, wanting to run everything and make sure to take care of everyone and do everything.
Yeah.
And it's just too much to try to do all yourself. And like, people do creative stuff for different reasons. And sometimes being dedicated to the community or showing up to rehearsal on time are not goals they have for themselves. You know, and you just can't like force a person to look at the world the way you want them to look at the world. You have to just take the way they do it and see if you can't fit them in as their own puzzle piece, right?
Absolutely.
And the hardest part is, like, the follow-up. Like, yes, you have to be to 3 rehearsals before you do this show. If you, when you do this show, you earn, you know, you earn your place in this other thing, and then that blah blah blah, you move yourself up, whatever the pathway is for your community. But right. if anybody at any point fails but is given a pass, then it ruins yeah. the whole system, right? Like, Susie yeah. was supposed to be at 3 rehearsals, but Tom said it's fine that she only did 2. So now she's right. in the show. She missed that one day. We were all talking about lemons. I'm making these lemon jokes. She's not picking them up, right? Like,
right.
all this thing. But then what's going to happen? We're going to yell at Susie? We're going to be like, hey, Susie, how dare you? She's like, Tom, give me a pass, right? So it's yeah. like this whole conflicted like scenario where you then have to juggle. I don't know. I love community stuff because of its confusingness, because of the details,
yeah, yeah.
because of how messy it gets. But I do.
Yeah, how you have to reinvent. Yeah, you have to be on your toes all the while, and you have to keep reinventing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, certainly cultural changes have happened since the moment I learned improv was a thing through to now. Yeah. The like way that people look at improv and the way that we build communities, even here, like, is so different. And some of the worst mm-hmm. things that have happened have been things that have informed better moves in our communities. Like, a theater yeah. I was a part of was revealed to that the artistic directors were deeply taking advantage of people and like dating people they shouldn't have dated and like promising right. shows and like giving opportunities to people based on like underhanded favors and stuff and stealing right. money. And that lesson, like, once that came out and everyone around the town heard about it, it made every theater improve their, like, what was going on.
Systems,
they, like, officially yeah. were like, by the way, everyone, that's not okay. In case it was unclear, don't date yeah. your students. And, like, don't steal money. And, like, half the theaters got cameras put in. And half the theater, like, things where it was like, we did not think we had to worry about this, but now we have to worry about this. So the whole community adjusted. And I felt really yeah. like, I was happy that we were able to turn around a negative thing to a positive thing, but it was hard and it was right. negative, and I still feel the stain of the negativity all the time. So it's yeah. like yeah. the community aspect in the individual theaters and then in the whole city is such an interesting, yeah. wild thing. I think it'll be great. I look forward to hearing about, you know, all the theaters you start running and everything you figure out, just because it's so... Like, being, I am so interested in the way people interact and the way people can experience stuff. And I am also yeah. deeply fascinated by reactions that I think are terrible. Like, when I'm like, why would a person do that? I became immediately fascinated
so
by, like, tell me why.
Because one of the things I remember is when, you know, we were both Adam and Eve's and... them, which is my duo with Abhi, were selected for Singapore Improv Festival, which was supposed to be in April this year.
Yep.
And we all had started saving up, etc., etc. And that's when the pandemic happened. And the organizers of Singapore Improv Festival were the kindest and most empathetic, and their communication was so transparent, one, so kind, two, and three, also almost understanding the place that everybody else would be in. It was very empathetic. And I was very surprised and very honored to have witnessed that. I was very, it was very moving, actually, the way Singapore Improv Festival responded to everything that happened, because as if one thing we all know is nobody was expecting this. Nobody knew what to do as soon as it broke. Because till I guess in January almost, they were like, okay, maybe the festival will happen. Maybe you guys will be able to travel and come. But then it was very clear early on that that's not going to be possible because of the COVID virus. Yeah.
It was so hard to get a, like, really establish what the right move was for so many months. Like, nobody knew how global it was going to get. Like, because I was on a trip at a podcast festival in Florida in March. I was literally afraid I wasn't going to be able to get home. Like, I was staying with my mom, who lives in Florida, and hanging out with her and thinking, like, two things. One, is this the last time I'm going to see my mother? And then two, can I get out of here to get home to my husband? Like, am I going to be stuck in Florida for the next, you know, 6 months to a year? Who knows? I mean, can you imagine? That would have been crazy. But, like, thankfully, we were able to get out. And then, like, maybe the week after is when they really started, like, going, like, okay, limits on who's traveling, blah, 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 blah. But it was like, oh, my God. Just the realization, like, my mom's up in Boston now helping she's selling the house we grew up in, and my cousin went up to help her clean it out, right? Literally, like, a week after she arrived, the, like, Massachusetts mayor was like, people from outside Massachusetts will have to be quarantined for 2 weeks before they're allowed to interact with the public. And they had been there already for 2 weeks. Now, admittedly, they're sort of quarantining because they're in the house with each other and not really many other people. But it was like, wow, you guys got in so, like, just under the wire before Massachusetts was like, nope. Especially Florida and Texas, the two hotspot states that are like, everyone's like, don't come in. Don't visit us. Stay in your state.
Right.
We're like, oh, man, can I just visit? Nope. Sorry. But, like, just all this uncertainty, you just don't know how to deal with stuff. Like, it is so nice to hear. And also, all the stuff that's happened, I feel like I've learned so much about how to be a business with grace. Like your experience that you're having with the Singapore Festival sounds wonderful. Like, I'm so glad that the organizers were able to deal with it calmly and to compose emails to everyone that was involved in a way to be like, we care about you so much. We wish we could have this. Turns out probably not. But there have been so many businesses that have handled this badly, like said things where it was like, oops, that's gauche, or like they, or even major businesses where you're like, are you kidding? They're bankrupt? Like, what? I can't believe this. It's been a very interesting thing to see how, I also worry about theaters, to be honest with you, as far as like, you know, you'll find out which theaters have a solid business plan and which do not, which have savings put away for just this kind of thing and which don't.
Yeah.
And the problem will be, you know, it'll suss out in whatever way it ends up, and we'll, you know, reconfigure as a community, which again is why it's great that you are excited to be a community leader, because you are needed. Right. And the world, when it readjusts and this company closes and that company closes and people are looking for somewhere to go and connect, it's nice to know that they'll have you and other people like you who are like trying to bring the community together and find a way to keep it going, whether there's a physical theater space or not.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So for you, since you've been involved with this kind of theater and you sort of flipped your life in a very drastic way, skipping that test, bold. That being said, my experience with you on social media and seeing those photos of you shaving your head, I'm like, she's a bold lady. That's what she does. She's strong. She likes drastic change. I'm into it.
Yes, I really enjoy going bald once in like 3 years. It's a wild experience. Nothing in my life quite compares to that experience. It is relatively such a simple thing. You cut your hair, you went bald, that's all. But the sort of changes that you see in everybody around you, in strangers, in the way you take space in the public realm, everything sort of changes, and it's very amusing.
I think there's something really great about taking a chance like that. about being bold in that way. A lot of people don't want to, you know, make waves ever in their lives. They want to just pass through and have no one notice. And, you know, sure, most of us in the theater realm, we're looking for a little attention. But like,
definitely.
But it's not always about just like, you know, bare bones ego, like, yeah, look at me, I'm cool. Like, sometimes it's just about like some little movement that I make is going to shake up your life. And it's not because it affects me. I'm fine. I got a haircut. Yeah. I'm much cooler. But the reactions, and think about these people who have the huge reactions, how much you've changed their life in that moment. Like, how much they're like, wait, that's a thing that you can do? Like, I can't tell you the number of times where I've seen somebody do something and then go, I didn't even know that was a thing. I did not.
I hear you. It's like, oh, is that possible? Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah. And but like that's part of the artistic bent. That's part of your, you know, like the way you are performing in your life. And I love that. I love that because people need to see something that they don't expect occasionally, and it doesn't affect you in a negative way. So why not like surprise them every once in a while? And they're like, ah, what? That's a thing we can do. Like, you know, those guys are going out and like, I'm cutting my hair too. Let's do it. You know, everyone's going home bald. They're like, what's going on? Like, it's a fad now. It's very cool. I almost did it. I mean, like, I had just gotten my hair cut before I saw your video. And I was like, oh, man, I wish I had just done that. Because my hairdresser was bald. She had shorn herself with the... at the beginning of COVID, she was like, I just didn't want to have to deal with it. She's like, it just felt like it was something that I could just clear up. And she said, because she has to wear, as a hairdresser, she wears so much protective equipment. So she was like, my actual hair was getting in the way. So now I cut it off. I can wear these extra masks and goggles and face things. And it doesn't like deeply affect me. And I was like, well, good for you. I was like, I think you look very cool. I also really liked her crazy gas mask, but that was just me. I enjoy a flair for the dramatic. I'm like, guys, if you don't like a mask, put a you know, costume on, right? Who doesn't want to be Zorro? Like, come on, let's do it. Like, you don't want to be a ninja? It's fun. Get in an outfit.
Exactly.
That's the only way I can get my kid to do it. I dress him up like a cowboy and I put the little bandana in front of his mouth. He doesn't keep it on very long, but he's 3. Presumably that's okay.
Yeah, but he's not supposed to.
Yeah. But at the same time, I dress us both up as cowboys when we go out so that he's like, oh, okay, cool. That's what we're doing. I got it. So final question for you.
Yes.
If you were to give advice to people in the world or in your community who are looking to get involved in theater the way that you have, how would you suggest to them they go about it? And, you know, what things do they need to watch out for to get there and not worry about what other people are thinking?
Ooh, advice is a tricky word, but I would definitely share what I wish somebody had shared with me about, you know, like you said, navigating through the non-scripted theater space in Bangalore, at least physical or now online, would be to definitely look up spaces like Improv Comedy Bangalore, IIT, Stage Fright. I think I'm sure I'm missing some other Bangalore-based improv. There is many improv groups that are taking improv to another level in Bangalore and over India. Two honorable mentions. One is to Nautanki Bars Improv. Their scenes are so grounded and their hard work really shows. Ankur is the person who heads that, and they are from, I think, Gurgaon or Delhi. And the second is Kaivalya Plays, which is in Delhi, and they do a lot of applied improv work about improv in mental health spaces. And that's just beautiful work to witness. So these are places where folks should definitely check out. If they want to get into the cast, performing cast, it would definitely, patience would help a little, especially because everybody's still figuring out the systems, but there are definitely live jamming communities. For example, we hold almost daily jams, and folks can then express interest in being a regular contributor. There are workshops that happen all the time. Those are good places to take part too. And sometimes I would actually say just shoot a message, like shoot your shot, especially now that we are all locked down, what's to really fear? And this I've been doing a lot, even while I was reaching out to some folks for the Improvathon, inviting them. I might have met them at a common event, but we had no personal connection. I would just leave them a Facebook message saying, hey, I saw you here. I've been following your social media work. Would you be interested in being part of ICB's birthday bash? And you would not believe, but it's so interesting. You would believe, but the improv community is so giving. Nobody ever said no. They all enthusiastically agreed to be part of it, unless they had another commitment, which was already, sort of predetermined. So I would really say just shoot your shot and write to whomever you need to. And I'd be happy to receive messages from anybody who would want to get into and share details. A less logistical but important question would, important thing to remember would also be, sometimes it feels like you need to be smaller in a space because you're just starting out. This is definitely something that I used to feel, that, if you're not good enough, or if you haven't had these many years of practice, you need to be smaller somehow. You need to take a lot of shit, maybe consciously or unconsciously from others. But I'm more and more starting to believe that that doesn't matter. It's more about asking yourself if being at a place and rehearsing and learning from you joy. And if it doesn't give you joy, I guess either it's time to bring it up with whoever your person of contact is, or maybe leaving that space. So that is something I wish I had known when I was starting out. So I'd like to share that.
Very nice. I like it. It's always good to keep what your expectations are at the ready. Yeah. What are you hoping Absolutely. To accomplish? I mean, and also, like, you're right. When you send an email out to people to say, hey, I'd be interested in being part of your community, maybe also indicate what you're particularly interested in being part of, because maybe exactly. that person who receives it is like, you know what, I would love you to be part of our thing, but it sounds like you'd rather do this thing. Let me connect yeah. you with this theater, and they Absolutely. Will be able to, because you never know. I mean, it sounds like playback theater and improv are similar, but also the way you describe them, they feel very different, certainly in community and in yeah. vibe, right? In what they're trying to accomplish yeah. for the audience. So potentially finding out what new interested parties are hoping to accomplish. Like, it's like, if you're just looking to have fun and party and enjoy some comedy, okay, this is your group. But if you're trying yeah. to like delve into deep topics, well, maybe this other group is better for you.
Yeah.
Not to say yeah. that everybody isn't trying, but certain groups are focused on different kinds of things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Awesome. Such a good talk. Thank you so much, Lakshmi, for being on the podcast with me. I really appreciate it. You have been a delight.
I want to say the same thing. You have stolen the words off of my mind. It was so, I actually in between forgot that we were doing this as like a formal podcast. In my head, I was just having a conversation with a friend and somebody who deeply listens. So it's been a wonderful time to share a space for listening and responding. And thank you so much for inviting me. I think it is. It was my honor and pleasure. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.